am a 12-year-old child with my hands cuffed behind my back, and I have been assassinated. Sandoval's comments and the demonstration in front of the Hale County Courthouse came in response to the Justice Department's announcement of last week that the federal government refused to step in and prosecute the Dallas police, the leader of the conspiracy, Dallas Sergeant Daryl Kane, on civil rights charges for the murders of several, including a youngster of 12 years of age, Santos Rodriguez. 5 years ago, Rodriguez, 12, sat in a Dallas cop car as Kane slapped a 357 Magnum to his head, playing games by spinning the revolver cylinder to scare the youngster. The 12-year-old Chicano died of a bullet that left a hole the size of a half dollar through his head. A Texas court convicted the spy of murder, but he got a very mild sentence. The Rodriguez case has outraged the Hispanic community, who are more organized and resisting fascist tyranny in USA than any other community, black or the Indian. In a bid for the votes of the significant Hispanic electorate, the Chicano electorate, President Carter met with Hispanic leaders in Houston last month. The community leaders showed the president color photos of Rodriguez and urged Carter to force the Justice Department to intervene by prosecuting a new trial. He only got a one-year sentence for murder. It was open, blatant murder of this police sergeant when he murdered this little 12-year-old brown-skinned Chicano lad. Carter promised that the case would be reviewed, but his words were, again, double-edged and a lie. The federal government's answer came last week. Justice Department spokesperson said the federal government will not reopen the case since Kane is currently serving his one-year sentence for the first-degree murder and because Texas originally prosecuted the case vigorously. Now, did you ever hear of a first-degree murder only getting 1 to 5 years? Impossible. Impossible. It's supposed to be life imprisonment or death. Texas has the death penalty. The Justice Department refusal prompted the Texas Brown Berets to organize the Plain View demonstration. Other groups participating were the Texas Farm Workers Union and the League of United Latin American Citizens and the La Raza Unida Party. Commenting on the federal government's refusal to step into the Rodriguez case and other cases of police murder and brutality, TFW spokesperson Roy Fernandez told the news, which was only represented by the alternate left press, that the federal government seems to intervene only in blatant cases of injustice when it fears that leaving state verdicts stand would lead to mass protest or lose votes for some crooked politician. They want to make people think that there's nothing to worry about because the federal government is getting in on this, Fernandez explained. But we're just getting tired of our people getting shot up in the name of the law, murder committed against them. Every time we turn around, our people are getting shot, murdered by the authorities, and nothing is being done. Demonstrators demand justice. The demonstrators, many converging on Plainview in car caravans from Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas, that ought to speak to those who think they'd like to go to Texas or any other place, came in part to demand federal intervention in the latest instance of police murder. Timothy Rosales, 25, was shot and killed last month in a town near Plainview in what was described by police as a scuffle with a Hale County deputy sheriff. Witnesses say that the sheriffs killed him in cold blood, that he was doing nothing but just looking at them. On July 14, a local grand jury declined to indict the cops, not even indict them, for cold-blooded murder. The Justice Department is once again, they say, studying the case. Oh, yes. Carter's got a lot of nerve complaining about human rights in Russia when here in this valley, it's like another world of fascist oppression, Fernandez observed in disbelief. It's a case of cleaning up your own backyard first. There may not be that many demonstrators, but at least the Hispanics, the Chicanos, are condemning the violence. The Hispanics called on blacks and Indians to do the same, because just as many blacks are shot down in cold blood. But for some reason, blacks are afraid or too apathetic to organize and demonstrate in Texas at this time. Philadelphia anti-cop vigil marks 1977 murder. More than 100 mostly Puerto Rican demonstrators gathered outside Philadelphia's police headquarters yesterday to mark the first anniversary of the cop killing of Jose Reyes. The all-night vigil demanded that criminal charges be brought against the officer, Gerald Salerno, and that he had fired from the police department, and that he be fired from the police department for the murder of this young man. Salerno shot and killed Reyes, a 28-year-old Puerto Rican father of six children, last July outside his home. His murder prompted widespread protest in the Puerto Rican and progressive communities. It resulted in the summer-long occupation of the Puerto Rican community by local cops in a police state manner, and spotlighted the extraordinary level of police brutality exhibited by Puerto Rican cops against blacks, Puerto Ricans, and working-class whites. They're making an open appeal, the Puerto Ricans are, for solidarity of blacks, Puerto Ricans, and working-class whites, who they claim are the victims of Uncle Tom, Puerto Ricans, and mostly white racist police. Again, it was an action killing in cold blood. The July 14 action was sponsored by the Puerto Rican Action Committee. It followed a vigil on the murder site, sponsored by a group of local community leaders. Some black were involved in that. Well, you have so much racism, I couldn't tell you all about the racist murders. It is estimated by the Chicago NAACP that there have been as high as 1,500 murders by police in cold blood in the major cities of USA since the beginning of this year. That's quite a number of people. Quite a number of people indeed. Iraq denies USSR strain. Iraq has refuted recent reports that it might be breaking with the Soviet Union. If Iraq criticizes the policies of a friendly country, it should not be judged that this is the beginning of change in relations. Iraqi President Saddam Hussein told a Newsweek correspondent in an interview here yesterday. The Iraqi leader also denied that the government was establishing a Persian Gulf defense arrangement with Iran and Saudi Arabia, as has been reported in the Western capitalist press recently. But there is very strong likelihood that that's the case. That's why the capitalists are shooting them, driving them out of their countries, expelling Iraqi officials, because the Iraqis are getting a strong influence with the Persian Gulf defense arrangement with Iran and Saudi Arabia to become self-determination wise in terms of building their own weapons and refining their own oil, to not be dependent upon USA. And it isn't an anti-Soviet move. Several news reports had indicated that Iraq was about to move away from the Soviet Union. Iraq is the only Arab country that has a very strong working friendship treaty with the Soviet Union. One indication of such a possibility had been Iraq's switch from the Soviet Union to the Arab countries as a source of building arms. According to Hussein, the arms trade, though, with West Germany and the Arab countries, Belgium and Italy, was to affirm Iraq's non-aligned status and to limit dependence on any one supplier. He warned that Iraq's dealings with the West had absolutely nothing in common with Egypt when it changed arms suppliers. Iraq is strongly condemnatory of Egypt, an ally of USA. In reference to President Sadat's break with the Soviet Union in 1972, and Egypt's subsequent closer alliance with the West, Iraqi president said this will not be the case with Iraq. Both the USA and the Soviet Union were active in world affairs to serve their own interest. The U.S. is maintaining a bourgeoisie system, and the Soviet Union is spreading communism, of course, said Hussein. The Hussein government is a nationalistic government in Iraq, but it is in the military alliance of the Soviet Union. And Hussein said that he feels that the Arab nations are going to have their own alliance to be able to not be imposed upon and oppressed by U.S. imperialism. He is the one that's pushing so hard for oil price increases, independence of the oil interests of the Arabs, so they can refine their own oil and go off the U.S. dollar system and on gold. In this superpower tangle, for hegemony, Iraq was only trying to ensure the Arab world was not turned into an east-west battlefield, the Iraqi leader explained. Recently, Iraq had disagreed with the Soviet Union over the latter's recognition of the right of the State of Israel to exist. That is the major issue between Iraqi. The Soviet Union has agreed that Israel must exist because they know that they have nuclear weapons, and the Soviet Union is obviously trying to avoid nuclear war. China has, on the other hand, said Israel does not have the right to exist. That's the difference between China and Soviet Union policy. China is very strongly pro-Arab. Iraq had also denied Moscow use of its airfields to supply military material to the Ethiopian socialist military government in its war in the Ogaden because Somalia was and is our friend, said Hussein. There were also reports that Iraqi authorities had asked the Soviet embassy in Baghdad to move away from the presidential palace, but that was later proven wrong. An Iraqi executed 21 officers for what they called a coup, attempting to bring them into being a Soviet satellite. These executions were done despite pleas from the Soviet and Eastern Europe diplomats. The executed pro-Soviets were charged with subversion. Nationalism, my friend, nationalism. But Iraq, according to BBC, is even more strongly anti-USA. It's just strongly pro-Arab, and it's falling out, even though they're still in the alliance, is over USA and USSR's recognition that Israel has the right to exist. Well, naturally you can't do away with Israel, but China feels that Israel and Palestine should develop a new nation, unified, and drop the Jewish state, the religious control of the Zionist, and make it a multi-party, multi-ethnic group state of Palestine. That's the difference between Chinese policy, USA policy, and USSR. It's very, very complicated. But you have to realize that socialism is superior to capitalism in the terms of what it does for its masses in free medicine and guaranteed housing, low rent, guaranteed employment, and the fact that it takes care of its citizenry. In the upcoming nuclear war, they have underground shelters, whereas capitalism has nothing. There is obviously very little racism in China or the Soviet Union or the socialist countries, but nationalism, the long history of distrust before socialist revolutions that came about by nations, the sense of national pride is a great threat and barrier to world peace. And there's no use to deny that it exists, because it does, and that is probably the most certain reason, the most absolute reason that would indicate that there will be, indeed will be, a nuclear war. Puerto Ricans are organizing against statehood as the main danger. Puerto Rico's largest and most influential political party outside of the establishment party, Puerto Rican Socialist Party, PSP, has virtually committed itself to a strategy based on the thesis that statehood for the nation colony has become the main danger to the future of the nation in a place where there is nearly 40% unemployment and gross poverty and malnutrition. They accuse U.S. government administrators of being guilty of the most blatant racism. Based on this concept, the People's Socialist Party, Puerto Rican Socialist Party, General Secretary Juan Mari Bras has called for the formation of an anti-annexationist front of all Puerto Rican groups and individuals opposed to statehood. He has indicated that the PSP would be prepared to support an anti-statehood candidate in the island's 1980 gubernatorial elections, even if the candidate were not in favor of independence. They want to avoid statehood at all cost. How sound is the analysis? Is statehood for Puerto Rico really just around the corner? Or is the PSP overreacting to what, after all, would amount only to a change in the legal status of Puerto Rico? Is the anti-annexationist front the correct answer to the threat of statehood? Wouldn't such a front strengthen the hand of those who support the present colonial commonwealth status and subordinate the struggle for independence to a political maneuver? There are some of the questions currently being debated in Puerto Rico and the USA by those most intimately concerned with the future of the Puerto Rican independence movement. First, it must be said that one reason why independence forces view statehood with such alarm is that, legally speaking, and in terms of international law, Puerto Rico as a state in the United States would then become an internal affair of the U.S. imperialist government. The independence movement would then become, by definition, a subversive secessionist movement, like in Quebec, where they established martial law some time ago, Prime Minister Trudeau did, and jailed them just for proclaiming their desire for independence. A considerable measure of international support could be expected to fall away. With all the remaining legal barriers down, Puerto Ricans see their country becoming another Hawaii, dominated by petrochemical companies and other capital-intensive monopoly capitalist industries, real estate interests, tourism, and retirees, prejudiced retirees from the mainland, with Puerto Ricans in time becoming a minority in their own beloved country. In effect, the PSP is saying that the move towards statehood must be stopped at all costs, particularly since statehood, unlike the present Commonwealth status, is politically irreversible. That is, of course, a danger. There is little doubt that U.S. imperialism is giving more active consideration to statehood as a legal alternative to maintain their control, making them the 51st state to the present Commonwealth status that it ever has before. The electoral victory of the pro-statehood New Progressive Party in the 1976 elections had certainly given pro-statehood forces an enhanced standing in Puerto Rico's political life. Ex-President Gerald Ford's endorsement of statehood shortly thereafter, followed by President Jimmy Carter's statement that he would support statehood if Puerto Ricans voted for it, is further evidence of Washington's imperialist interest in the statehood option. Nevertheless, statehood is not necessarily Washington's first option. From a legal point of view, U.S. corporations presently operating in Puerto Rico might not be able to maintain the present preferential capitalist tax treatment they have received from the colonial government. Existing federal regulations, such as the minimum wage law, won by the U.S. working class over decades of struggle, would have to be extended to Puerto Rico if it were to become a state, and the U.S. government does not want them to have minimum wages guarantees. The same would apply to other social legislation, including whatever limited forms of environmental regulation now prevailing in the 50 states, as limited as they are. At the same time, the federal government would have to assume responsibility for certain forms of social welfare, an obligation which would probably require greater expenditures by far than at present. Racism, national chauvinism, and simple old-fashioned political nose-counting can also be expected to fuel a strong right-wing opposition in the USA to any statehood proposal. Given its colonial status, Puerto Rico's population is considerably to the left, politically as compared to the electorate of any USA state. As a state, Puerto Rico would be entitled to 2 senators and 7 representatives in Congress, as well as more electoral votes than half the states. The political tilt of such representation would undoubtedly be liberal, progressive left at the least, hardly encouraging conservative-dominated state legislatures to approve statehood. On the other hand, Democrats might see statehood as a political plus and support it for that political selfish reason. But the biggest obstacle in statehood to the Puerto Rican people, the working class in particular. Despite the PNP's 1976 election triumph, there is little evidence indicating that the masses who voted for the party were in any way endorsing statehood. Rather, they were protesting the deepening economic crisis of the island and the complete inadequacy of the dominant pro-Commonwealth Popular Democrat Party. It's a colonialist right-wing party. In short, the vote was a protest against the PDP and not an expression of support for the People's National Progressive Party, which is more liberal. It wasn't supporting its statehood proposals. Well, just a little background on Puerto Rico, which is going to be the source of a lot of independence and class struggle efforts in the days to come. Thus ends the news and commentary for the afternoon. Know these commentaries, particularly on Puerto Rico and things of that nature. Take note of the harsh racism that's happening throughout the USA. Remember, classes they'll be held in group session unless otherwise notified. Now, the other news of the earlier morning will be given. Please take note of the news. Be prepared for the requirements I've given you over and over again for testing evaluation. Thank you. I love you very much.